This is the Project Management Podcast. We bring project management topics to beginners and experts. Find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com or send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to episode number 66. I am Cornelius Fichtner. This is the Project Management Podcast for the 7th of April 2007. Listener Alexander Maslyukov wrote in and said, "In my company, there are functional managers who have all the power. Functional managers assign salary, bonuses, and have responsibilities for promotion of the employees. PMs don't have any instruments to force staff to do everything. The only way to make the team do something is to persuade them. But how can we motivate people?" In response to Alexander's question, we are going to delve into motivation today. We review the various motivational theories. We look at how you can see if motivation is actually a problem on your project. We look at what you can do to motivate and energize your project team on a shoestring. And we end it with James Chapman's very elegant motivation triangle. What we have done in the past is that we first give you several helpful resources on the topic of the day, and then we would jump into the main topic. Today, we're going to be combining these two. As we are reviewing the various aspects of motivation, we will also bring in the ideas from these helpful resources. And of course, as always, we will link to them on our website so that it's easy for you to go out and find them again. Let's first do a few announcements, followed up by several unhelpful resources, and then we'll get into the motivation. The first announcement is the donations button. If you stop by at www.thepmpodcast.com, you can now see a donations button in the right-hand navigation. If you find that the Project Management Podcast is of value to you, then why not consider donating to us? The donations are currently being collected in order to improve our audio quality. We need some better equipment here. And trust me, your donations are welcome. We also have two polls on the website just underneath the donations button. The first one is about a couple of weeks ago when we introduced you to the Controlling Chaos podcast. We would like to know if you liked it. So please stop by and vote yes or no. And we also had a few listeners write in and ask if the podcast is available on CD to purchase. We can certainly do this, but we first would like to know what the general interest is in such a CD. Please stop by the website and vote on this as well. Tell us, yes, I would buy the podcast on CD, or no, I would not buy it. And as you are visiting the website, why don't you leave a comment on today's episode? Comments are now open to all registered users. Register, become part of the community, and let your voice be heard. Today's episode is sponsored by the Project Management Learning Center at www.projectmanagementlearningcenter.com. The PMLC is a brand new online community that is open to all us project managers out there who think that lifelong learning is important. You can share information, network, and find jobs. One strength of the PMLC is that it has a long list of authors who regularly post new articles on the website. You will also find that many interview guests that you already know here from the Project Management Podcast are contributors to the PMLC. Yeah. As announced, all our helpful resources will be mentioned during the main part of today's episode. But we still have the unhelpful resources, which is of course the list of podcasts that I listen to in my spare time. And the category that we will look at today is podcasts on business. Let's start out with the excellent Internet Business Mastery podcast. This one is by Sterling and Jay. They are both internet entrepreneurs and they give very good and sound advice on how to build your internet business. The second one I listen to is Quality 101, not necessarily a business podcast, and we have also mentioned Quality 101 before. It is a wonderful podcast done by Paul Palms. If you need quality on your projects and in your business, and trust me, we all do, then you should definitely listen to this one. The third podcast on my business category list is the Marketers podcast. This one comes to us from Australia, and it comes to us, unfortunately, very infrequently. It is by Alan Stewart and Andrew Winter, and they give you sound marketing advice, which we employ here, actually, when working on marketing efforts for both our podcasts. And finally, the Small Business Podcast. This one is by TNC New Media, which happens to be a company local here in Orange County, California, where we are located as well. Tim Berquin is the host of the program, and he brings on a number of entrepreneurs who will talk about their experiences and best practices as small business owners. This is very valuable for me because the more popular the podcast has become, the more I had to begin looking at this as a business. And that's it for our four unhelpful resources. You can find these unhelpful resources recommendations in the, interesting enough, helpful resources section at the PMpodcast.com. Go check them out. And now let's head right into our main topic, which is motivation. To start out, let me once again say thank you to Alexander Masliukov, who motivated me to take on this subject personally. When I asked him if he knew of any experts in the field that we could bring on as an interview guest, he wrote back and said the following: "I think you don't need any experts. I'm sure that you can yourself speak about it. You can describe your personal experience. I think you struggle with such problems in your everyday work life. But before we get into my experience, let's take a look at the various motivational theories that exist out there. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is, of course, the number one topic, the granddaddy of theories when we are discussing motivation. This hierarchy of needs is a theory in psychology which Abraham Maslow proposed in his 1943 paper titled A Theory of Human Motivation. This theory says that as humans meet their more basic needs, they seek to satisfy successively higher needs that occupy some kind of a hierarchy. Maslow's hierarchy of needs is often depicted as a pyramid. It consists of five levels, and the four lower levels are grouped together as deficiency needs, which Maslow associated with physiological needs that you have as a human. And the top level, which is termed a growth need, is associated with a psychological need. The basic concept is that the higher needs in this hierarchy only come into focus once all the needs that are lower down in the pyramid are mainly or entirely satisfied. Let's start out at the very bottom. The first level at the very bottom is the physiological needs. The need to breathe, your need for water, your need to eat. The second level of the pyramid is safety. Here we talk about the security of employment, the security of revenues and resources. The third level up is love or belonging, and is sometimes also called the social need. Here we talk about friendship, we talk about having a family. Next up in the hierarchy are the status or esteem needs. You would like to be respected by others, you want to be able to respect yourself, and you want to have some recognition. And finally, the fifth level at the very top of the pyramid, this is called self-actualization. This is the instinctual need of humans to make the most of our unique abilities and strive to be the best that we can be. Self-actualization is actually the most important one in the pyramid for us here as project managers, because as a human and as a project team member, you are striving for self-actualization. So you might want to say that as a project manager, what is my job? My job is to help my project team members reach self-actualization. There are three motivational theories that are known by a letter X, Y, and Z, or Z if you are a non-American English speaker. Theory X and Theory Y are theories of human motivation developed by Douglas MacGregor in the 1960s. They describe two very different attitudes towards workforce motivation. MacGregor felt that companies followed either one or the other approach. For you as a project manager, it's important to understand these theories so that you know where you personally fall in within these categories and also where your team members fall. Only then can you adopt your leadership style accordingly. So let's look at those. X is the theory where management assumes that employees are inherently lazy and that they will avoid work wherever they can. Because of this, workers need to be closely supervised and a comprehensive system of controls is developed. A hierarchical structure is needed with narrow spans of control at each level. According to this theory, employees will show little ambition without an enticing incentive program, and they will completely avoid responsibility whenever they can. If you are a manager that believes in Theory X, then you believe that your employees don't really want to work, that they would rather avoid responsibility, and that it is your job to structure their work and energize the employees. The result of this line of thought is that if you are a Theory X manager, you naturally adopt a more authoritarian style based on the threat of punishment. Theory Y, on the other hand, assumes that employees are ambitious, self-motivated, anxious to accept greater responsibility, and exercise self-control and self-direction. It is believed that employees enjoy their mental and physical work activities. It is also believed that employees have the desire to be imaginative and creative in their jobs if they are given a chance. There is an opportunity for greater productivity by giving employees the freedom to do their best. If you are a manager who believes in the theory Y, then you believe that given the right conditions, most people will want to do well at work, and there is a pool of unused creativity in your workforce. You will believe that the satisfaction of doing a good job is a strong motivation in and of itself. A Theory Y manager will try to remove the barriers that prevent the workers from fully actualizing their potential. And here we go again. As a Theory Y manager, you are focusing on the self-actualization of your employees. And then we move on to Theory Z, or Z, depending on your pronunciation. Theory Z is the name that is applied to the so-called Japanese management style, and it focuses on increasing employee loyalty to the company by providing a job for life, with a strong focus on the well-being of the employee both on and off the job. According to Dr. William Ochi, the Theory Z management tends to promote a stable employment, high productivity, and high employee morale and satisfaction. And there you have it, that's the Theory X, Y, and Z, or C. But there are two more that I would like to look at with you today, and that's the Herzberg's theory of motivators and the hygiene factors, as well as the expectancy theory. Let's start out with Herzberg. In 1995, Herzberg constructed a theory of factors that affect people's attitudes about work. He concluded that such factors as a company policy, supervision, interpersonal relations, working conditions, and salary, that they are what he called hygiene factors rather than motivators. According to the theory, the absence of hygiene factors, like not having enough pay, can create job dissatisfaction, but their presence does not motivate or create satisfaction. For instance, the worst job in the world will not give you job satisfaction, even if it pays you $1 million Australian a month. In contrast, he determined from the data that the motivators were elements that enriched a person's job. He found five factors in particular that were strong determinators of job satisfaction, and they are the achievement, the recognition, the work itself, responsibility, and advancement. Think about this for yourself for a second. Achievement, recognition, the work itself, responsibility, and advancement. For me, this kind of sums up the five areas that really make up how I personally view my job and whether or not I'm motivated. So these motivators, they were associated with long-term positive effects in job performance, while the hygiene factors consistently produced only short-term changes in job attitudes and performance, which quickly fell back to its previous level. Herzberg, by the way, called them hygiene factors because these factors prevent dissatisfaction when they are present. They do not increase satisfaction. This is just as hygiene itself, because hygiene itself, it prevents disease only when it's present. So if you're hygienic, you prevent diseases. But if you already have a disease, it will not increase your well-being. You can wash yourself as much as you like when you're ill, you will probably not get better, just because of this added hygiene. Let's finish off our theoretical overview with the expectancy theory of Victor Vroom. This one deals with motivation and management. Vroom's expectancy theory assumes that behavior results from conscious choices among alternatives whose purpose it is to maximize pleasure and minimize pain. He realized that an employee's performance is based on individual factors such as personality, skills, knowledge, experience, and abilities. The expectancy theory says that individuals have different set of goals and can be motivated if they believe that there is a positive correlation between effort and performance. If there are favorable performances, they will result in a desirable reward. Then the reward will satisfy an important need, and the desire to satisfy the need is strong enough to make the effort worthwhile. In other words, if you expect that good work will be recognized, you will do good work. If you believe that good work will not be recognized, why bother? You won't be doing good work. All right, so much for the theoretical overview over all these various motivational theories. As you will see in just a moment as we move on, none of them is really 100% applicable 100% of the time. You're going to have to take these motivational theories, understand them, know them, and apply them on your project. When we're talking about motivation on the project, we are also talking about the project team itself. And the project team has various stages that it goes through as it is created and moves on. These stages are known as forming, storming, norming, and performing. Let's take a look at these just briefly. The forming stage is, of course, the stage where the project team is in the initiation phase. You, as the project manager, it is your job to bring the team together at this point and make sure that they begin trusting each other. The next one is the storming phase. There are various ideas that are going to be competing in the storming phase. There's a storm brewing on the project team on how to address the project correctly and how to move this forward. And you have to consider all of these. As a project manager, you're going to have to be guiding your project team, because this can be a turbulent and transitional phase. You're going to have to really show that you can be a coach. Next, we have norming. This is where behavior, methods, tools, techniques are being established on the project team. You, as the project manager, you have to allow the project team to become more autonomous. You have to participate in the project, but you have to let the project team go. And then we have the performing stage. This is where the interpersonal structure becomes the tool of task activities. Roles are flexible and people really start, well, performing on the project. All the energy that you have as a project team is going to be focused on the project. As the project manager, you need to let the team make most of the necessary decisions. Here, pull back and delegate. There is one stage that is not often mentioned as part of this model, and this is what some people call the adjourning stage. Remember, we're doing projects here, and they're temporary in nature, so at some point, the project is going to end. You will adjourn the project team. Now, think for yourself. Oh, okay, the project is going to end in a year. I still have a year's time. No problem. There is no motivational issue. But what if it's 3 months away, a month, a week away? You're going to want to know what's happening to you in the future. And you, as the project manager, you're going to have to make sure that you present alternatives to your team members. Show them, oh, once you're off this project, we're going to transition you into a new project. So you want to make sure that you keep the motivation of your project team members high, even towards the end, towards the adjourning stage of the project, so that you can get the most out of them. If you would like to delve a little bit more into forming, storming, norming, and performing, check out the helpful resources of today's episode. We have a link to Wikipedia where they discuss these four stages. Next, I'd like to take a moment and talk about how to use motivation on your project as management by exception. By this I mean that we normally don't think much about motivation on the project if things go well. But once we perceive a problem on the project, we should also look at motivation as a factor. There may be obvious signs that motivation is poor on your team. For instance, when people come up to you and actually tell you that, hey, you know, morale is bad on your project. Or it may be not as obvious. Maybe you're missing deadlines, or people are often out, or you notice that the team members don't chat with each other over a cup of tea every now and then. Here's a general, albeit very simple, process that you can follow to determine if motivation could be an issue on your project. Well, first of all, start out by ensuring that you actually do have a problem. If your project is hitting deadlines and it's on track, you may not have a problem to worry about at all. Remember that what we are doing here is trying to do management by exception. If there is no problem, you don't need these steps. If you perceive any project problems, try to establish if motivation is in fact one of the causes. Maybe your team isn't missing the deadlines because of motivation, but because there is just way too much work to do, so you want to eliminate all other possible factors. If you feel that motivation could be an issue, then here comes the hard part. Look for the causes of lack in motivation. Not all of them might be under your control. If there is a general gloom on your company, there's little you can do. But if it is a question of improved direction on the project, of explaining the project objectives to your team members, and heightening the team spirit, yes, then you can act. But before you act, make sure that the basic needs of the team are satisfied. Ask yourself, are the assignments that I have given clear enough? Does the team maybe not get the support it needs? Is my door always closed? Is everyone challenged enough? And at the same time, is there anyone maybe who is over-challenged? By asking and addressing these questions, you can improve the environment for your team. And then we will want to begin working on motivation. From my experience, motivation has a lot to do with liking what you do and liking who you are doing it with. Be creative and encourage people to talk to each other to improve their, you know, liking who you are doing it with. There are a few very simple ways of doing that. Bring some breakfast foods into the office on Fridays, for instance. Here in the USA, bagels and cream cheese are very popular. Back in Switzerland, I used to bring croissants on Friday morning. Make it known to your project team members that at 8 o'clock Friday morning, people can stop by in your office, or if you don't have an office, choose a meeting room, to snack and to chat. That way, you can foster communication between your team members. Or simply go out to lunch together. Ask one or two members of your team if they want to join you for lunch. You will be surprised how quickly conversations start and how this will improve relationships and morale. And by conversations, I don't mean work conversations. You know, how are the kids doing? Do you like your new car? Where did you go on vacation? All of this is part of motivation. There is so much that is within your control. Addressing questions of motivation and morale in this way is, of course, not something that has an effect overnight. You can't just walk up to people and say, "Hey, mister, improve your motivation." It's something that you need to work on consistently. If you are a project manager, team morale is part of your ongoing responsibility. Another way that I personally like to build morale with may not work for you. I like to play practical jokes on people. And I love it when people play practical jokes on me. The trick is to play these practical jokes on people and make sure that they are not hurtful, but show them that they are considered as being part of the group. For instance, we recently got a new member, John, on our team, and he is very much into recycling the plastic water bottles from which he drinks at the office. He makes sure that all of them get recycled. About 2 weeks ago, he had a day off, and I was walking past his desk, and I saw his water bottles lined up, and I was thinking to myself, how about if we filled John's cubicles with water bottles from all over the office? So I got our team together, and within 15-20 minutes, we had run around the office building and collected every last one empty water bottle in the office, and we had put them into John's cubicle. As we were doing this, we laughed and chatted and we had a generally good time together. This brought us together as a team. When John came back the next day, he laughed his head off as well, and then we all stood around his cubicle and we helped him to put the bottles into his recycling bags. This was once again another opportunity for bonding and improving morale for the whole team and also bringing John in. This process that I have just explained to you, you know, the one that starts with validating whether you have an actual problem and you ascertain whether motivation is the issue and then you address motivation on your project. This process can help you to get the team excited again and keep your project on track. Nothing motivates people more than being part of a success and being part of a team and having fun. I have already mentioned one helpful resource to you, and that's the article on the Wikipedia on the forming, storming, norming, and performing. I'd like to continue with a few more helpful resources now. One item that many of us are currently faced with is the fact that our project teams are not co-located in the same physical area. Many of us have to deal with virtual teams. So the question, of course, is how do you deal with motivation on virtual teams? Personally, I have a team of a few software developers located here in Southern California, all within one building, and we also have one developer who is in India. That doesn't make it much easier. Not just because we have someone who is in India, we have someone who is in India. So he doesn't have anyone else with him in India right there. So how do you motivate a person like that? I found a white paper on the internet titled Successful Motivational Techniques for Virtual Teams, written by Ginger Levin and Parviz Rad. And in this, they take a very academic approach to answering the question. One sentence that I liked is actually a definition of what motivation actually means. They say that motivation is a process, action, or intervention that serves as an incentive for a project team member to take the necessary action to complete a task within the appropriate confines and scope of performance, time, and cost. So, like I said, a very academic approach. They do, however, have a list of ideas, or rather guidelines, on how you can work with virtual teams and help motivate them. They start out by saying, well, look at yourself. What motivates you? How do you get motivated? Use that as a guideline to motivate others. But this isn't going to work all the time. Of course, they mention money, yes. Money is a traditional motivator. But they also mention awards. It's always good to be able to give some sort of a formal award to team members. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the project team member of the month, but giving out a formal award, a formal thank you to a project team member for doing an excellent job. They also talk about being able to give your project a slogan. Yes, because you can rally people behind a slogan. But over time, of course, the slogan will wear out and you have to find new ways of motivating your team. As a project manager, what you do is very much motivation for your team members. So you have to be a cheerleader, is another argument that they bring on in here. And I agree with that very much. When I am down and I go into my boss's office and she is up and chirpy, it really picks me up. And this kind of translates down to my team as well. In the white paper, they, interestingly enough, also talk about the motivation when there is a problem, the process that I talked about earlier. Now, let me come back to my developer who's in India and what we are currently trying to do to motivate him. Like I said, he's alone. He's been working on our project for about a year, and he may not necessarily see long-term into the future where this is taking him. Well, we decided to give him more responsibility. We decided that we need to offshore more of our work. We want our developers that are onshore here to be able to focus on other items, and therefore we want to shift work towards our offshore resources. Now, this is good for our offshore developer because we're going to make him the lead developer. And we're going to bring someone else onto his team who he will be able to train. So I called him up and I made it clear to him, look, this is a great opportunity for you. You can grow, you can become a team lead. And he jumped on this immediately. He was thirsting for this. He was waiting for us to give him some kind of a signal that he is really appreciated and that we want to keep him on. And this was exactly what we did. I don't really have a wonderful, great silver bullet for you in regards to how do you motivate people on your virtual team. But I hope that Adrian Keane does. And Adrian Keane is scheduled to do an interview with me on virtual teams. And trust me, the question, Adrian, how do you motivate people on a virtual team, is on the list. And you can look forward to that interview, which is coming towards you soon on this channel. While I don't have a silver bullet in regards to how to motivate virtual teams, I do have a few ideas for you in regards to what turns on a team. And What Turns on a Team, by the way, is also the title of an article that you can find on the Thompson International website. It's about team motivation, of course. And on page 7 of this article, they give us some relatively low-cost ideas on how to motivate teams. They start out by saying that you can give people research and development timeouts. I think we have mentioned this in the past, but in Google, you know, Google the company, Google has a policy, and if you work for Google, please correct me if this is not correct, they have a policy that employees should work a certain percentage of their time on personal projects. I've heard that this is anything from 10 to 20% of each employee's time. This is a great motivator. Imagine if it's 20%, one day a week, you can do whatever you want. You have your own little projects, you can work on this, you can try something new, you can fiddle with new technology. This is just fantastic. It's a great motivational tool. Next on the list here at Thompson International is the feedback from the business management. Yes, business management feedback is important. Think about it. Most people on a project team, they get feedback from those who are working very closely with them. But the end customer, you usually don't hear from the end customer or the business management, the customer's management. So if you are able to go out and have some kind of a feedback questionnaire and ask management to please fill that in and give general feedback on the performance of the project and how it's going, and then be able to distribute this to your team members, this is going to make them see that their work on this project is appreciated by the customer. The next item on Thompson's list is something that my company does very well. They actively support extracurricular activities. Let me give you my example. I am the president of the local PMI chapter here in Orange County. This is actively supported by my boss and my company. My company even goes as far as allowing me as the president to use our meeting rooms and hold our monthly board of directors meeting in our facility. To me, this is an incredible motivator, and it really helps me appreciate my company that much more. Ah, yes. And the next item on the list is something that you just cannot miss. And that is encourage fun and play. Frankly, if you don't have fun and play on your team, if it's always, you know, just same old treadmill, then people will just be demotivated and get tired. And then bring some fun and some play back into your daily work. And finally, here on this list, we have ask your team what rewards matter to them, or ask others what rewards matter to the team members on your team. Here's what I did. I wanted to recognize one of my team members, Chris, at one point, but I didn't really know what he likes. Is he someone who likes wine, or is he into chocolate, or what does he like? So I went around and asked his colleagues, and I quickly found out that he really enjoys a good bottle of beer. So what I did is I went into a specialty shop and I bought him a very nice bottle of beer, and I showed up on his desk one day and I said, "Here, thank you very much. You've done a very fine job, and here is a very fine bottle of beer as a thank you." So you see, there is a lot that you can do on a shoestring, on a very small budget, as a project manager to improve morale and motivation on your project. Let's move on to the next helpful resource. And this is actually a presentation by Robert L. Kimmons. He is a PMP, and it is titled A Powerful Tool, Project Team Motivation. Now, when you stop by on the website and you take a look at this, yes, the colors are absolutely hideous. He's chosen orange and red, extremely bright. But I must admit, Robert, I have never seen motivation put into words the way that you have put them into words. What he does is he sums it up with four words. He pretty much says that motivation has to do with can do and will do. And under the can do, he says that this is the area where you talk about whether or not you are able to do the work that you're required to do. We talk about skills here. We talk about knowledge here. And when we talk about skills and knowledge, we immediately have to talk about training, which can be a way of motivating your people. So you start out with the can do as the first part of motivation. The second part is then, of course, will do. And this is the area where you talk about whether or not you want to do this. And here we talk about the human needs, where we go immediately back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, as well as your personal attitude. Okay, so we have the can do and we have the will do. Okay, so what do you do with all these do's? Well, you put them together. Because once you put them together as can do slash will do, then you will notice that the team member performance will depend on a few things. It depends on knowing what has to be done. Clear instructions. It depends on knowing why the project is being done. Review the goals with your project team members. It depends on the necessary information to do the work. Give them the training, give them the skills, make sure they have all the background information. It also depends on having the tools for the work. And it also depends on the ability to concentrate on their assignments. You want to make sure that there is no bad multitasking happening. And finally, you want to make sure that they are excited about their role in the project. This is very important. So there's a lot of can do and a lot of will do that goes into people being able to do their job and being motivated to do their job. If you can help them to make sure that they can do and that they will do their tasks, then you will not have any problems with motivation on your project. And finally, let's take all of these theories, all of these ideas that I have given, the can do, the will do, the storming, forming, norming, and performing, and let's put all of this into a very elegant graphic overview. And this one is by James R. Chapman, and he calls it the motivation triangle. Here's what he writes. There are three things required to have a motivated employee. First, provide clear ownership of a defined task. Second, ensure the person has the ways and the means to do the task. And finally, follow up with timely feedback and hold the individual accountable for results. James now goes on and takes this statement and gives it to us graphically. He draws a triangle, and on one side of the triangle, he writes task ownership. On the other side of the triangle, he writes tools and training. And on the third, he writes timely feedback. And what do you get? You get a wonderful graphic representation of everything that we have discussed today. You get the tools, the training, the ownership, the feedback. I can see Maslow in here. I can see forming, storming, norming, performing, the can do, the will do, all the great ideas that we've seen today in a very, very simple graphical display. This is absolutely wonderful. And that's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com. And if you are a PM who wants to become a PMP, you can also visit www.pmprepcast.com. In this second podcast, we teach you concepts, tools, and techniques that you need to know in order to pass the PMP exam. Please send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com, and when you write, please tell us where in the world you are writing from. And finally, we have this joke for you. A man is flying in a hot air balloon and realizes that he is lost. He reduces height and spots a man down below. He lowers the balloon further and then he shouts, "Excuse me, can you help me? I promised my friend I would meet him in half an hour, but I don't know where I am." The man below says, "Yes, you are in a hot air balloon. You are hovering approximately 30 feet above this field. You are between 40 and 42 degrees north latitude and between 58 and 60 degrees west latitude." "You must be a programmer," says the balloonist. "Oh, yes, so I am," replies the man from below. "How did you know?" "Well," says the balloonist, "everything that you have told me is technically correct, but I have no idea what to make of your information, and the fact is, I'm still lost." Then the man from below says, "Oh, you must then be a project manager." "I am," replied the balloonist, surprised, "but how did you know?" "Well," says the man from below, "you don't know where you are or where you are going. You have made a promise which you have no idea how to keep, and you expect me to solve your problem. The fact is, you are in the exact same position you were in before we met, but now this has somehow become my problem." Until next time.